5 or 6 years ago. They got the biggest computers that were, you know, around at the time to play the 4 top chess masters in a 5-day chess tournament, and the human beings won. And Bill Gates asked the computer, is there anything you'd like to say in closing? And the computer unprompted said, don't trust us.
Dan Pena doesn't believe in comfort. He believes in pressure. From growing up with nothing to building and advising companies worth billions, Dan earned a reputation as the most feared and respected mentor in high-performance entrepreneurship.
I bought a company quite by accident Christmas Eve, less money than was in the bank account. I went to look at the assets in England, and so I found 4 million acres non-producing oil reserves. So I bought a 6-month option for $60,000, and I said, I'll be back.
Direct, brutally honest, zero tolerance for excuses. Dan doesn't motivate. He confronts. He strips away fear, entitlement, and self-doubt until all that's left is execution.
When I started all this, I didn't give a fuck about anybody. I'm on board, pull up the gangplank. All I wanted to do is shove money as much as I could in my pockets. I didn't give a shit about anybody else. The last 15 or 20 years, I've realized I've created 25 million jobs. I didn't start this thinking that I was going to help humanity. Everybody talks about change, but nobody wants to change themselves. It's easier to stay focused. Not easy, but it's easier if you're passionate about it.
Dan, you turned a $60,000 option into a $450 million company in 99 days. So walk me through how that happened.
There was nothing serendipity about it. When I bought a company quite by accident Christmas Eve for less money than was in the bank account for one of the billionaire guys I used to run with or hang out, as you would say now. And I went to look at the assets in England. It was on my board that I inherited was the father of the North Sea, a guy named Robert Dyke, who founded the North Sea at Argyle, and some very distinguished guys. And so I said, well, shit, the UK had just been saved from bankruptcy by the oil taxation in the North Sea, so I got to find something to go public. So I ran back to the United States. First of all, I put the team together, one layer better than the current teams that were taking secondary and tertiary companies public. I went back to the United States, and I looked for assets. And so I found 3.5, almost 4 million acres of non-producing oil reserves in the Denver-Julesburg Basin in Wyoming. And I had $60,000 left in the bank. So I went to the guy. Now, he has been selling options on this property for decades. He collects the option money, and they never come back. So I bought a 6-month option for $60,000. And I said, I'll be back. And he said, yeah. And this is before Schwarzenegger was saying this, I'll be back. And he said, yeah, sure you will, kid. So I went, zoomed back to the United States, and I told my team, how do I monetize this? And so they there was a genius kid who's now gone dead, a guy named Jeremy Knight. And he said, you have an option. Well, I don't believe an option's ever been taken public. But we'll check with the Bank of England. So he went and checked, and he came back a day or two later, and he said, an option's never been taken public, but we're not sure that the Yellow Book, which was the rules of the stock exchange at that time, will allow it. Well, why can't we be the first? And it's going to cost legal this, that, and then I said, well, I'll do it on a delayed fee basis, okay? And so we got the lawyers that at that time were Freshfields, and the Freshfields were the leading law firm in Europe, and they used to say, we represent the Bank of England, the Church of England, the Queen of England, and Dan Pena. Okay. We got it to Bank of England. But at that meeting, that crucial meeting on a Friday afternoon, about 2 or 2:30, they said, Mr. Pena, we suggest you don't come to this meeting. Because I will neither confirm nor deny. I used to lay hands on people, choke them and shit like I'm accused of. And you can't do that at the Bank of England. So I screamed and yelled and I said, okay. So they went. So about 1 minute to five that afternoon, I get a phone call from Jeremy Knight. He says, we got it through. We're going to take an option public. What are we pricing it at? What do you want to price it at? 400 million. Who cares?
It doesn't matter. Yeah,
okay, doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay. And so it actually went public on my 39th birthday at 10 in the morning, 1984. And when they hit the hammer down, you know, that $60,000 was worth about $400 million.
That's insane. Yeah. That's insane.
Now, we tried it again. We went to the Netherlands. We're going to do it again. We got it away. And then they put in the Pena rule, as it's called, where you have to own what you take public on the stock exchange in England and in Amsterdam.
Before that didn't exist?
No. Mm-mm. Didn't exist.
So you fucked the whole system up.
Yeah. And now and some of my mentees have tried it in Hong Kong, Beijing, Vancouver, etc. And of course they figure out the research. And of course now with Google, and you can't do it anymore. But it was one of the deals of the 80s, the great deals of the 80s. And so it was kind of my first claw at financial greatness, so to speak. And but I've done a bunch of deals like that. That's the biggest one that I get credit for, because I virtually put 60 grand in and turned it in, you know, hundreds of millions.
Were you from a young age, you were aggressive about anything you did, though?
Right. My
that came from your
alligator
dad?
Alligator mouth overloaded my hummingbird ass on a daily basis.
Was that your dad?
My dad used to beat me. He'd be in jail for child abuse because there was a right way, a wrong way in my dad's way. And he believed in tough love. He didn't know what that meant at the time. He didn't have a father. His father died just before he was born. And my dad was a cop, a high-profile cop. Then he went into the CIA, and he was allegedly an assassin in the CIA. And he just... when he got home once or five or six or seven times a year, my mother used to put on the refrigerator with magnets. The nuns beat Dan for this. The priest beat him for this. He got thrown out of school for this. And so when my dad would catch up, he'd do all the beatings at once, even though he wasn't there for 5 months, you know. And he used to tell me, "This hurts me more than it hurts you." And I used to say, "That's horse shit." Bam, he'd hit me again. And I used to tell my mother, I said, how can he lie to me like that? It can't possibly. He says, emotionally, your father has no emotional, emotions. I mean, he's just
no
hard-ass guy.
Yeah.
You know, fought in two wars, blah, blah, blah. He's just hard-ass. And he knows that you should be more disciplined. The only goal my parents, especially my father, had, and I just had dinner with my 84-year-old cousin in Tampa a few days ago, who reflected a lot of this. The only goal they had for me is to keep me alive till I reached the age of reason. And they were not sure if that would ever happen, because I was doing crazy shit all the time. All the time, and I had leadership skills that I learned from my dad initially, and then I honed my leadership skills when I went through OCS during the Vietnam crisis, I could talk guys into anything. I mean, I could talk girls into anything.
You were just sales. You were sales.
I was a hard closer. Yeah. I never took no for an answer. I just had my 60-year high school reunion a year ago, and the girls would come up to my wife and say, "Danny didn't know, K-N-O-W, no. He didn't understand no." And all the mothers of the girls I dated hated me, okay? All the fathers hated me because they knew what I was up to, and that's just the way it was. I was, as I reminded my class, I was the only one that got up to speak at my 60 high school reunion. I reminded them, you voted me class clown. You voted me for least likely to succeed. And they did. And so little girl that I used to date said, "We were wrong, weren't we, Danny?"
Why do you think, when you look at, you know, I know you talk about younger population or younger generation a lot, and I even feel, I'm 35, I'm young, I'm not even halfway to 80 yet, but I even feel when I look at a younger generation that they are more insecure, more uncomfortable with hard work than even I was. Like, I've worked. I didn't do physical labor my whole life, but I've worked nonstop. Even when I was going to university, I would work 9 to 5, and then I'd take my classes at night and on the weekends, because I always liked work. I always thought that work on the other side of work was like a better life. Now I find that, and this is a generalization, but I've had so many friends, and myself included, try and hire kids, like, you know, like 20, 25, only 10 years younger than me. And they value different things, but I also don't think that they understand that a good life is on the other side of work. So they want balance. I don't know what that means. I don't know what balance means, but I just know that if you don't put reps in at a young age, you're going to wake up when you're 35, 40 and wonder what the fuck happened in your life.
Right.
What happened? How did this happen?
Jack Welch, who arguably, in my opinion, was the best CEO in corporate world in the last 50 years, said it better than I. He says, there is no work-life balance. There's work-life choices, and they have consequences.
I like that.
Okay? And he was a super manager, and I competed against GE when I was with Siemens and Klaus, okay, when I was helping Klaus to become CEO. And they did it with less people. They had a higher revenue per employee. He took GE from 360 or 70,000 employees down to 170, while he tripled their EBITDA and their revenue, et cetera. Whereas Siemens had 450,000 employees, and it stayed with 450. In fact, the biggest thing that Klaus used to be accused of when he became CEO of Siemens is he manages like an American. Okay.
Interesting.
Okay.
That was supposed to be a bad thing.
Oh, absolutely bad, because we did it with less employees. Yeah. Okay. And they were more productive, even though the Germanic people are very productive. They like to work hard. But the problem, one of the problems Siemens had is they had unions. Okay. And which the was Nethnel for Jack Welch at GE. We're just in the process of hiring a guy to be COO of one of the companies I'm chairman of, who was 15, 20 years with GE. And without even interviewing him, I knew that he was the right guy because he had been trained by Jack Welch. Okay. And so the and there's four or five guys out there, most of which aren't managing anymore because they're so old. Sandy Wheel in the insurance business from Prudential fame was one of those guys. But they're all, I was the young guy in the group. And they were all 15, 20, 25 years older than I am. So if I'm 80, they're 90 or 100 or dead. Yeah. Okay. But they feel entitled now. My own children feel entitled. They had an entitled life. All the years that they've been alive, I've had a lot of money. Yeah. Butlers, governesses, et cetera. And so they didn't have to work that hard. And although... today's kids, I was privileged. I trained six of the nine oligarchs of Putin. Six of the nine I trained. We just had the first son of one of the oligarchs come through the program last November. He says, "Thank you very much, Mr. Pena, for not embarrassing me by saying who I was. I would never, you know, I made the deal with your dad 25 years ago. But the Russians love my program. It's the mafia model without a gun."
Explain, what does that mean?
Oh, that means I'm giving you a deal you can't refuse. And not can't refuse because I'm going to shoot your kids. Can't refuse because it makes so much economic sense. I was asked a question when I was on the Patrick's show a couple of days ago about Bitcoin. And I said my answer is like Jamie Dimon's. Even though I don't believe in it, and Jamie Dimon says, I'll make a market in it because my customers want it, we'll give them a market. So I've had to learn a lot about Bitcoin. I alluded to it a few minutes ago that I've got four or five, maybe six billionaires from Bitcoin, not because of me, but because they happen to be involved in that end of the financial continuum. But my QLA is 70, 80, 90% seller finance. We don't indulge or involve commercial banking unless we have to. Commercial banking is our default. If we can't get it funded any other way, we use commercial banking. And the TV program that came out 6 or 7 years ago, Succession, yeah, tripled my business. Because even small companies have succession problems. You don't have to be a billionaire to have succession problems. Okay? You can't say families without saying lies. Okay? Even a guy that's got a little $2 million business, I'm not scoffing at the $2 million business, you know? My grandkids don't want to be involved. My wife says I'm working
hard. I've heard this a lot of kids. There was a business that I was, that when I was early on in my career, I joined, I was just working for them. And it was a $10 million business. And the guy had built this business up from scratch since the 90s. And his kids wanted nothing to do with it. And this is, I see this again and again and again and again. Now, is this because they hate the relationship they had with their parents is because it's too much
poor work? Role models. Their parents, kids don't do what you tell them to do. They do what they see you do as a parent. And most parents are poor role models. We're the average of the five people who spend most of the time. Let's say we have a loving, nourishing mom, probably single mom. We've got a brother, a sister. We've got maybe one grandparent. We've got the next door neighbor. And somebody else, what the fuck do they know about creating high performance people? Nothing. Nothing. Now, there are exceptions. The Williams sisters. The father beat them. Okay? Tiger Woods. The father beat him. I can go on and on and on. Okay? Tough love. Okay? And my dad and my kid brother, who just retired as the number two guy at the LA County Fire Department after 40 years, he didn't get beat as much as I did. But my dad was tough on him, but my dad was getting old. He was running out of energy by the time my kid brother came along, who's 15 years my junior. and he made it to the number two guy in the third largest fire department in the country. I made it whatever I've done. But laterally now, I get credit. Although, I want to be clear. When I started all this, I didn't give a fuck about anybody. I'm on board, pull up the gangplank. All I wanted to do is shove money as much as I could in my pockets and be filthy rich. I didn't give a shit about anybody else. The last 15 or 20 years, I've realized I've created 25 million jobs. That's more than Amazon, Walmart. 25 million jobs is a lot of jobs.
A lot of fucking jobs.
I didn't start this thinking that I was going to help humanity. But as it turns out, you know, I've created $2.4 trillion in equity, okay, which is bigger than most countries. And just recently, in the last couple of years, I'm involved with the Catholic Church. I'm the unappointed apostle of finance for the Catholic Church, trying to keep them from going bankrupt. Their Catholic Church is one recession away from bankruptcy. One recession. That's it.
Not to go off on a rant, but how is the Catholic Church doing so poorly?
Because they paid out $11 or $12 billion in reparations for all the kids they raped.
This is why they can't.
There's no money, and within the laws of the Catholic Church, you can't hypothecate's the word they use. You can't borrow against the assets, and you can't sell the assets. So all the trillions of dollars they have in assets. And it's estimated they have between $3 and $7 trillion in assets.
And they can't borrow against it. So they have no cash.
They're asset rich and cash poor.
You've always been Catholic? So.
Yeah, I was raised a Catholic. And in fact, the little church that I had my first communion and I was baptized in, which is in the hood in East L.A., which Sal, my wife and I support now, they used to collect, Father Albert used to collect $8,000 a week in the plate when you pass the plate around. Okay. He now collects 800.
Oh, that's a conversation how society is becoming secular and moving away from.
Absolutely. And the school in the hood, which Sally and I also support, in that same little district. And we've gone to the local bishop, and we just met with the local cardinal with a program. Everybody says that you're right. We'll pray for you, but they have no money. I'm not making this for money. But they said, what do you want for this, Mr. Pena? You save the church. You're 87 years old. I want to be canonized as a saint while I'm alive. And they look at me. It can be done. I want to be the first saint alive.
I was wondering if religion in general is growing by leaps and bounds in the U.S. Because I see, I don't have data. You know this stuff better than me. I just made the assumption.
Well, I'm going to make a joke. None of the other pastors have any data either. They just make shit up.
That's valid. I don't doubt that. But I was wondering if just general religion, especially in U.S. Western society, is on a decline. Because I've also thought, I've had conversations about this. I don't think that's a positive thing, because then if you don't have the religion, then it gets replaced with some other version of God, which is usually...
It's not religion. It's the family household is in decline. The father and the mother... The 2.5 kids, one dog in the picket fence, that dream is dead. And it's been dead for 40, 50 years.
So it's not just religion, it's American dream.
Correct. Your grandfather went to work for General Motors, worked there 40 years, got a gold watch at the end of the thing, and he actually had a pension he could live off of. And now that's not the case. Now you have to supplement your income. And the joke to me, LinkedIn is the greatest tool for my model. Okay, and they say that they're interested in charity work, et cetera, et cetera. 99% of the people on LinkedIn are looking for secondary and tertiary sources of income, because if they did retire, they don't have enough money to live on. The corporate villa they used to use, the corporate credit card, the corporate cars are all gone now. And so when you get tired of bouncing your grandkids on your knee, eventually you do get tired. I never started, so I can't tell you I'm tired. I was a mediocre father, and I'm a worse grandfather. But now there's not enough income, and we just went over the $38 trillion mark, I believe, for national debt. $38 trillion. That's a lot of fucking money, you know. But I created $2.4 trillion, so it's not that much money. I know how to do this.
Why do so many people have issues making money, living a new American
dream? Well, I mean, I came from a dirt poor family. But money was equated Only ugly things happen when you make a lot of money. We used to have mortgage burning parties on my street. You pay off your mortgage after 25, 30 years. You get a 55-gallon barrel drum. You have a barbecue, and you burn the mortgage. I used to tell my dad when I was 12, 13, 14, are we stupid? That's the only fucking proof we've got that we own the fucking house. And then my dad used to say, I'm just a cop, but you're right. We are stupid. Why would you burn it? Nobody believed. Well, my 84-year-old cousin, who I just had dinner with a couple nights ago, she remembers that shit. You know, she says, and she verified, you know, Danny's not exaggerating. He says, you know, it's unbelievable. But now we've set our standards so low. When they announced Trump's SAT scores, supposedly 978 or 90, I got the same with the scores 1 year before he did. Okay, and whether that's true or not, I don't know. But you couldn't get into any kind of good school with scores of 970 out of 1600, and I'm sure it's not much different now. The way he was raised, whether he got 4 million or 400 million from his dad, is significantly different than 99.99% of the people on the planet.
Of course, yeah.
My kids were raised like Barron Trump. So my kids can relate to, you know.
Yeah, but do you think your kids are going to be more screwed up because they had that upbringing?
Yes. They have, two of my kids have big jobs in the corporate world. Okay, I have a special needs son, which he didn't give a shit, and he's supported by me, so. But he's got special needs. But the two have big jobs. They make big six-figure money, in my opinion, for doing fuck-all nothing. I forgot more about what they do individually when I took a shit this morning. This is my own fucking flesh and blood, okay? And they're ahead of the group. They're considered in the top 1% of their... I have a 41-year-old son and a 39-year-old daughter. And they're considered at the top of the heap.
Raymer is a success story partner. Now, you could be a solopreneur. You could be an entrepreneur. You could be somebody just sitting at home who's trying to start a business out of their house. But you know the drill. You need good design to create a website to get your business off the ground. But good design is expensive. And you can't afford to hire a designer for every single landing page, social post. But you also can't afford to look amateur. And I've been there. You need to move fast. You need to look professional. But you also need to not blow your budget on five different tools. Framer already built the fastest way to publish beautiful, production-ready websites, and it's now redefining how we design for the web. With the recent launch of Design Pages, a free canvas-based design tool, Framer is more than a site builder. It's a true all-in-one design platform, from social assets to campaign visuals to vectors and icons, all the way to a live site. Framer is where ideas go live, start to finish. And the best part is it's actually free, not a trial, free. I'm talking unlimited projects, real vector tools, 3D transformations, everything you need without the nickel and diming. So if you're ready to design, iterate, and publish all in one tool, start creating for free at framer.com/design. And make sure you use code SUCCESSSTORY for a free month of Framer Pro. That's framer.com/design and use promo code SUCCESSSTORY, framer.com/design. Promo code success story. Rules and restrictions may apply. Priori is a success story partner. Now, how many times have you set a goal, you've been fired up for a week, and then you've completely fallen off? That's not a discipline problem. It's a systems problem. That's why I use Priori. It is a goal setting and habit tracking app built on neuroscience, backed by Harvard research and inspired by Atomic Habits. You set your priorities and Priori breaks them into small daily steps built right into your schedule. So instead of feeling overwhelmed, you just follow the plan. It gamifies everything, streaks, check-ins, small wins that build momentum, and 78% of users succeed after years of failing at the same goal. Over 12,000 people use it. They have a 4.7 star rating. It's free to download. Check it out at priori.life or search Priori in the App Store or Google Play. That's priori.life.
What kind of heat? I mean.
But I'll tell you something. So those people that make the six-figure jobs, if they're laid off, those are the people that are in the most trouble.
Correct.
Because for 30 years, after they got the job, they've never learned a new skill.
Correct.
Those are the people that are going to be, you talk about this, replaced by AI, and then they're really shit up.
How are podsters going to be replaced by AI? Well, I'm not so sure about that. You know, you could be a hologram, and I just, you know, I don't know it.
You know, it's true. It's true. But will last longer than all the other jobs. Creative people that look at the world differently will last longer than other jobs.
Creative people will always wind up on top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it could be a different version of creative. But that's the thing. So to your point, is a podcast going to be the same in 5 years? Well, no, then it wouldn't be good. It's got to, everything has to evolve.
Correct.
Or else you're dead.
But right now, everybody talks about change, but nobody wants to change themselves.
Because change is scary for people.
Absolutely. We look for change opportunities. I signed a artificial intelligence contract in Tampa 2 days ago. And they're talking about, this is pre-money valuation based on revenue, 60 to 120 times revenue. 60 to 120 times revenue. And I said, for my interest, I'll just take $1 billion today and I'll walk away. Thank you. You know, it's all up to you kids, and they're all kids. Yeah. You know, the oldest guy in the room after me was 36, and the youngest was 21. I'll take $1 billion today and walk.
Do you think that, you know, everyone's saying AI is going to change the world, going to replace whatever, most jobs. Do you think the valuations are worth what they're worth?
No,
or do you think,
because
like
not.
You look at OpenAI, they're betting that Google won't beat them. They're betting that Claude by Anthropic won't beat them, and they're raising more money and they don't have the revenue to support it.
You're not old enough to remember the .com bubble. But I was part of that bubble. I was part of that.
So you've seen
thing.
This play out
oh,
before.
Absolutely. Okay. And then it was like 10 to 20 times revenue.
Yeah.
Okay. The low end was 40. The high end was 118 times revenue. I go, fuck. And so my guy, do you think the revenue estimates should be higher? Let's just sign the papers. let's get this part done quick before somebody changes their fucking mind.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And the lawyers and the accountants didn't live through the .com. Sally and I used to be one of the largest advertisers on Google, $100 million a year, 1999, 2000-ish. The other guys that were spending that kind of money on Google advertising were porn, okay? So we'd sit in a room of 15 of the biggest guys that spent money for AdSense. We used to make $70,000 to $80,000 a day on AdSense. Then somebody woke up, some 22-year-old guy decided that change the algorithm. So we went from $75,000 on Monday to $82 on Tuesday. Why are we giving them that money? Even though they had the money. But I predict between 20 and 40% in the next 10 years of all entry-level jobs are going to be gone. Yeah. And I love telling this story. About 5 or 6 years ago, they got the biggest computers that were, you know, around at the time to play the four top chess masters in a 5-day chess tournament. And the human beings won. And Bill Gates asked, because he was there, the computer, is there anything you'd like to say in closing to the computer? And the computer, unprompted, said, don't trust us. Now, Jesus Christ, am I the only fucking guy that read that? The other thing that I read and everybody passed over during the corona, COVID, the Bank of England came within $100,000 of closing, £100,000 of closing. They had a little teeny thing in the bottom of the Financial Times, you know, on page 51 or something. We're fucked up. In 1972, MIT wrote a paper. Basically said, a long, long paper, they'd done a lot of studying, that before the end of the next century, which is the century we're in, there will not be any Homo sapiens. So that's 75 years from now. Okay, 4 or 5 years ago, they did an update to that paper. We're ahead of schedule of doing the Homo sapiens away. Did you ever see the movie Robot with Will Smith?
Of course, yeah, of course. Yeah,
that's our future.
You know, there's robotic companies now like that, like Figure AI with Brett Adcock, and they're putting robots in car dealerships to do all the manual work. They're putting it on the assembly line at Amazon to replace all the people.
We have two robots in the castle.
You have two robots now?
Yeah, Gordon 1 and Gordon 2. And by this time next year, we're going to have 3 or 4 robots in the castle, not working on the yard.
Are they replacing staff?
Yeah. Well, no, not yet. Next month, I'm having an all-hands meeting. because we have too many people. The robots don't eat. They don't get sick. They don't sleep. They don't take vacations. No sick days.
But what happens when there's no more jobs left?
I'll be gone. I don't give a fuck. I'll be a saint by then, so I don't give a shit. I'll look down on you or look up wherever I am, and I'll just say, you know, poor fucking bastards. You know, if I had to start over again, see, I give my product away free. And for 20 years, I don't monetize anything. Okay. I didn't know you could monetize, you know, but I didn't realize I'd be still doing this though. Also, I would monetize. I do like everybody else does, just like you explained to me very nicely. I don't know any of that shit. And I haven't had any of my employees be required to know any of that shit. But now that I'm starting a podcast in a few weeks, we're going to look at things differently, but I'm still going to give all my product away free. And one of the things I'm going to do when I die is is it called open source or?
Yeah, open source. Yeah.
Everything I have.
Free, yeah.
Because it's only 2% that's not online that you get in the seminar. Everything is going online. And, you know, I've got a bunch of guys, mentees of mine that I train. I'll be the second you. No, you're not going to be the second me, okay? You're a cunt. You just happen to get rich. But you're not another me. And but a lot of these guys, and God bless them, you know, they figured out a twist or a turn. The way you explained, and I might add, you explained it more clearly to me just when we started here. I didn't know.
Because I obsess over the shit. I've always found that, like, whatever I'm going to succeed at, if I obsess over it, I'll figure it out. Yeah. I also don't like wasting my time on, if I'm going to do a business, I don't like wasting my time not making money on it. Like, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to obsess over it. I'm going to find a way to make money on it. I think that people should, like, there's nothing wrong with making money.
No.
At all. But I think that sometimes people don't, they feel uncomfortable.
And they feel uncomfortable based on probably what their parents felt about it.
Yes, because you get all these beliefs about money, about whatever from.
Correct.
From people that only lived a certain way. So you have, you know, I love my parents, but they weren't entrepreneurs. They worked. My dad worked in the government. My mom worked for universities. So a lot of the things I had to figure out, I had to reframe my relationship with money, with success, with entrepreneurship, with hard work. I had to reprogram.
And what happens, you rarely step away from those five people that you spent most of your time with in childhood. Self-esteem is built the first 7 or 8 years in life. Now, the Catholic Church, which I reminded him of in recent weeks, used to, pre-Vatican Council II in 1965, when the Mass was still in Latin, and the priest used to stand with his back to you. Okay, part of the homily, which is their sales pitch bullshit, it says, you give us your child the first 7 or 8 years and we will own them as a Catholic servant for life. Because they knew self-esteem was built. The Spartans took the kids away from their parents at 7 or 8 years, and the kids that couldn't go to be Spartan warriors were thrown in a fucking ditch. And I say it a little different. Most of you should have rolled down your fat mama's leg and never conceived anything.
So you have all the people that come through your program. This is QLA for people that don't know your program. This is QLA. And I know that a lot of what you do with QLA, you're talking about strategic asset purchases, seller financing. That's like one way to make a lot of money, right, if you're successful at it. But ultimately, it's not just how to make money. It's like, how do you tackle life?
Correct.
So what do people get wrong when they try and tackle life? Like, what are the issues that you see with the younger generation?
First of all, they underestimate how hard it is. Change, we alluded to 5 or 10 minutes ago. People talk about it, but it's tough, okay? And they underestimate, that's number one. I'm often asked by, you know, some bright kids, can you be a part-time high-performance person? I kind of chuckle and say, no, I've never met a part-time high-performance person. I mean, is there some way, although we have people that work out jobs, finish off their PhD, finish medical school, and still do this, but they're working 100, 120 hours a week, okay? For 9 years, 11 months, and 3 weeks, I work between 100 and 120 hours a week. That last week of the 10th year, I got behind my desk and I looked at the phone and I couldn't do it anymore. I crapped out 1 week short of 10 years, okay? But a great deal of my net worth that I gained in those years is I still attribute to my wealth today. But I mean, I was a focus You know, I say, let me back up. Bill Gates wanted to meet Warren Buffett 35, 40 years ago. So Mrs. Gates, is not his wife, but his mother, had a dinner, invited Warren Buffett over. This is a famous story. They're sitting around the dinner with Bill Gates Sr., which is who was a lawyer till he passed away, Bill's lawyer. And he said, if you, and she had an open-ended question. It was a lull in conversation. And she was talking to all people at the table. What would you attribute your success to? Bill Gates Jr., the Bill Gates we know, and Warren Buffett both said simultaneously, focus. And what I say, those who get laser beam focused first, stay laser beam focused longest, win the most. But I mean, we have so many, information is almost instantaneous now, or it is instantaneous vis-a-vis the internet. Yeah. Okay. And we have so many distractions. I see little 3 and 4 year old kids all with their tablet. Okay. Instead of, you know, I don't know what they should be doing, but they shouldn't be with a tablet. That's for goddamn sure. And now people are becoming, the last 5 or 10 years, aware more and more and more that little kids are seeing bad things on those. Yeah. Because it's very difficult to restrict what the little kid sees. And the, you know, I'm not so sure when the right time for a little kid should be able to see porn, but I mean, it's certainly not when he's 3 and 4.
Definitely not. No, I think the technology, social media has fucked up so many people. And we're not even seeing the, listen, technology, social media, AI, I don't even know, I'm scared about what it's going to do to a younger generation that grows up with it. Because now, even my generation, we have issues with focus and with attention, and we can't pay attention to anything. We're watching TV, and then we have our phone here, then we have our laptop, and we can't sit and just be with our thoughts for more than 30 seconds. So what happens when you, and now AI is making us dumber because we're not even thinking for ourselves anymore. What happens when a whole generation grows up with this?
Well, we've seen what happened since woke and the COVID crisis. I mean, we've got at least a half a generation, if not a whole generation, that didn't learn anything. Yeah. And we're suffering because of now. And the real reason people like Google and Facebook interview 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13 times because nobody wants to make a decision and be wrong. So they do consensus hiring. I had a kid, one of my whiz kids, 7 or 8 years ago. He moved to San Francisco to be close to his chairman on a QLA roll-up. He had no money. He was not a programmer. He studied programming from Thursday night till Monday morning. He went in and applied for a job. He went through 3 interviews and got hired by Google. 3. Okay. Had never written a piece of code. And he learned how to code Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and early Monday morning. I hired a guy yesterday. I knew within 20, 25 minutes, and it was a Zoom. I don't like Zoom interviews because I wasn't in the room with him. 20, 25 minutes, this was the right guy. I talked to him 30, 40 more minutes, and I knew it was the right guy to be president of one of my deals. It's a $400 million company, and I could just tell he had the right answers. He had enough scar tissue, no matter how genius you are, and Zuckerberg's a great example, smart kid, no doubt about it. But in the beginning, he had some speed bumps that he made into Mount Everest. Yeah. He did some fuck ups and they had to change this and that and the other thing. They're not experienced people hiring people now. I had a board, the same board for 10 years. I lost one board member because he dropped dead. The kids, I have kids that have 23 different board members over a 5-year period because they don't know how to hire. They don't, you know, what can a 24-year-old kid know? Nothing. You know, and we have 17, 18, 19-year-old multimillionaires, okay, that they got lucky. They got lucky. But you don't need to go through 25 people building a board. But one of the things, that the company that takes you or the board or the advisors that you have for the first 5 million are not the ones that get you to 500 million, okay? It's transition, not just a transition of what they know and learn about your model. It's a transition of what you learn and accept and the changes, because no model is perfect no matter what it is.
Quick question. What's your go-to when you got 10 minutes before a meeting or a workout? For me, it just used to be whatever I could grab, which usually meant skipping meals entirely or just grabbing something that left me crashing an hour later because it was just full of garbage. That's why I'm partnering with Huel. This Black Edition ready to drink is a complete meal. So it has 35 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, 35 essential vitamins and minerals. It is no sugar added, gluten-free, under $5. I always keep a few of these in my fridge. And honestly, it solved the whole back-to-back meetings, go, 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 nonstop, no time to eat problem super well. And this one's new for me. It's Huel's Daily Greens. I had the blueberry this morning. Honestly, first impression, it was way better than I expected. It's developed by registered nutritionists and dietitians. There are 42 vitamins, minerals, and superfoods, only 25 calories, 4 grams of fiber, and just 1 gram of sugar. I throw one back first thing before my morning calls every single morning. Look, if you're running a business, time is the most valuable asset. Huel makes healthy eating simple, and they also just launched at a Target stores nationwide, so you can get it everywhere. Try both products today with 15% off your purchase for new customers with my exclusive code Scott at Huel.com/Scott. Try both products today with 15% off your purchase for new customers with my exclusive code Scott, S-C-O-T-T at Huel.com/Scott. Use my code, fill out the post-checkout survey to help support the show. That is Huel.com/Scott. They really make healthy living taste amazing. Even if you're on the go, healthy eating, healthy lifestyle doesn't have to taste bad. It doesn't have to suck. NetSuite is a success story partner. Now, every business owner I talk to is asking the exact same question. How do we make AI work for us? The possibilities are endless. Guessing is a little bit too risky, but sitting on the sidelines isn't an option either because your competitors are already making their move. The answer is NetSuite by Oracle. You can put AI to work today. NetSuite is the number one AI cloud ERP. It's trusted by over 43,000 businesses. It brings your financials, your inventory, your commerce, your HR, and CRM into a single source of truth. And that connected data is what makes your AI smarter. It automates routine tasks, delivers actionable insights, helps you cut costs and make confident decisions, and you've got total flexibility. And with the NetSuite AI connector, you can use the AI of your choice, connect it to your actual business data, and automate all those manual processes. This isn't a bolted-on tool. It's AI built into the systems that run your business. So whether you're doing millions or hundreds of millions, NetSuite keeps you ahead. And if I needed this product, this is what I'd use. Now, if your revenues are at least in the 7 figures, get the free business guide, Demystifying AI, at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. The guide is free to you at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. So if you were going to talk to a mentee that goes through this or if you look at the most successful mentees, because the guys that come through your program, the ones that are successful, they make good money. They're financially successful. They figure out how to succeed. What's the personality trait of somebody that can be successful?
98% of the high performance people on the planet today are not alpha males like me. They're introverts. Gates, Zuckerberg, I can go down the list. Okay. Klaus, okay, are introverts. Only 2% or less are extroverts like myself. Okay. People misinterpret extroverts like the president or myself. I'm not putting myself in the president's category, but you don't have to be like that. I mean, Bill Gates wouldn't say shit if it was in his mouth. I mean, dribbling down the side of his mouth, he wouldn't say shit, okay? And most of the high-performance people are like that. When you look at the Fortune 500 or Fortune 200 companies, you know, 40% or 50% of the CEOs are Indian, from India, okay? Jack Welch, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs years ago, and Sally and I had a big business in southern India for a long time. The smartest people on the planet come from southern India. Between Mangalore and Bangalore, there's a strip there. We had a big tech company there, and we had, you know, a couple thousand employees. We had people riding on a scooter from Punjab in the north, 900 miles for a job interview in Bangalore. Okay, here, if it's convenient, oh, it's on a Sunday, I can't do an interview on Sunday, you know, not because they're going to church, yeah, or Saturday if they're going to synagogue or a temple, whatever, because, you know, I want to see the Lakers, I want to see who Miami, whoever the hell. Kids are lazy.
You mentioned it's not extroverts. Is it laziness? Is it accountability? Like, what is it?
No, I mean, it's determination, focus, you know, it's... we had a kid come to the seminar a couple years ago. He saved up 2.5 years to afford the seminar. Seminars are cheap. And he just because he wanted to have the gumption, he'd been working out at 24-Hour Fitness in Manhattan for several years. And every morning at 4:30, he gets on the running machine, and the girl next to him is there on the running machine. Just have the gumption, the balls, the temerity to ask her for a cup of coffee. So he comes back from the seminar. She says, no. And she says back, after all the time that we've spent on the running machine next to each other, if I wanted to have a fucking cup of coffee, don't you think I'd ask you? Fuck off.
But you need to be able to fucking ask the question.
Well, yeah, if you don't ask, you don't get.
You don't get.
Now, he was crestfallen for 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, but then, listen. I'm a big fan of, like, just running towards things that will...
One touch of gunfire.
100%. Because the more you fail, the more you learn, the better you are. Like, everything that I've done in my life, and I am not even a fraction as hard as you are when it comes to, like, my message and what I sort of teach people. But one thing that I am 100% behind is, if you suck at something, do it 1,000 more times.
Correct.
And fail 1,000 more times. And then somewhere along that journey, you'll find out that you don't suck so much. And that's everything I've done in life. Working out, relationships, podcast, business. I mean, when I interview the first person, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I have no idea. If I jump on stage the first time ever in front of 1,000 people, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm scared shitless. You know what then I'll do? I'll find 200, 300 more events that will have me on their stage. And you know what's funny? By the time I do the 300th speech, I'm not nervous anymore.
I started the first financial planning department on Wall Street, and they said, you can do whatever you want. Don't embarrass us. You have no budget. And I made speeches from Bangor, Maine to the Keys, from La Jolla to Seattle, Washington. But I got through about 100, 120 speeches. I was a world-class speaker.
That's it.
I mean, they threw plates at me. I mean, you know, I was a world-class speaker. And the scar tissue. And I showed up 2 days early, 1 day late. I got used to being uncomfortable. I got comfortable being uncomfortable. And the kids today don't want to do that. They just don't. If it has, they have these training programs that... they're tantamount to nothing, really. When I was on Patrick's show a couple of days ago, a lot of general topics, but if I watch CNN, Al Jazeera, and Bloomberg all day, from the time I get up in the morning to the time I go to bed at night. At 11 o'clock, Sally comes in and we watch a movie for an hour and a half, and have a glass of wine. But up until then, I'm watching news the whole time, okay? And I've got screens like this through the different news programs. And so I have a general knowledge of what's going on. They had a survey year before last in Washington, D.C., high school. Who's the first president of the United States? 67% failed. They're in Washington, D.C. Who is the president of the United States?
Why is it so bad? Why is education so bad?
Well, I mean, now the teachers, a lot of the teachers, and almost all of them have a liberal bent. You saw when the president of Harvard and the various schools, a couple of which stepped down because they wouldn't take a position on whether, when they were talking about Palestine, et cetera, they wouldn't take a position. Because once you dig in your heels and you take a position, you're either going to be right or you're going to be wrong. But if you just give a general bullshit answer...
But that's where education wisdom goes to die. Like, true education is when you challenge ideas.
Correct.
Because that's how you get better.
Correct.
That's how you.
Yeah, but those days are 200 or 300 years ago. They're not today. I mean,
even though you have strong opinions, I bet you respect the shit out of somebody that comes out with a counter opinion that's well researched.
And I'll listen, and while he's talking or she's talking, or in this case, it's talking, he didn't think of this, he didn't think of that, and I'll bring it up when it's time, when it's my time. When I was young like you, I wouldn't let a negative sentence come out of your mouth. I would jump in and stop you right away and say, well, you haven't thought about this, and what about this? interest rates or the velocity of money. And when you talk about shit like that, nobody knows what you're talking about. Okay. I've been in cash since I'm 60 years old. From my 60th birthday to my 64th or 5th birthday, my wife and I sold all our assets off. I call it shit. We had a lot of shit. Penthouses and that, all the shit. And so the only thing we have now is the estate that we live in. And we don't own it. A trust owns it. But anyway, that's the only thing.
Of course, as it should.
Okay. Cash. And people ask me, what about inflation? Okay. Bunker Hunt told me when I was a kid, Danny, if you're worried about inflation, you're not making enough fucking money. What about taxes? I pay taxes, both in the United States and the UK, because I'm a dual citizen. He said the same thing. If you're worried about taxes, Danny, you're not making enough fucking money. Okay? It's the same thing about getting on the property ladder, which I alluded to when they were talking on the panel that I was just a member of. You know, this is not the first time that it takes you 4 or 5 times your salary to buy a house. This is not the first time, like they make it sound. Okay? You just went out, you worked overtime. In some cases, people borrowed money from their parents. My parents didn't have any money to loan me. And so I just went out and I had to work harder. Unfortunately, a lot of people, they live together. Okay? As two guys living together, you know, whoring around. Of course, guys don't whore around anymore. They don't consume alcohol. They don't, you know, I'm not suggesting that you have to consume alcohol. But there's places in the United States of America today, this very hour, in the South, if a man won't have a goddamn drink with him, fuck him. I'm not doing any goddamn business with him. Today.
Yeah, I know.
What do the kids do? They don't go down there. So the fastest growing economies right now, Florida, Texas, and a couple others. Now, I can't speak for Florida, even though I was born here. But in Texas, you go to Addison, Texas, or Electra, Texas, you know, I mean, and I'm not suggesting that people should drink if it's they're on a 12-step program and stuff like that. But I find someplace else to do business. Because you're going to be restricted, whether you need to or not, by the fact that, you know, I had guys that were Muslims back in the day, and they would order a drink and just leave it there. You know,
they want to build the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But ultimately, you're talking about it's not the first time when it's taken 4 or 5 times your annual salary to buy a house. But the issue is, years ago, there was no not working when you were 20, 21, 22.
And you weren't living at home when you're 35.
No. And these are things that are reality now. So I was talking, you know, at the beginning, I was talking about how not everybody, but I find that even people that are younger, they don't have the same work ethic and they seem to just drift for longer. They seem to be confused about where they're going to end up, what they're going to do. They're not excited about sort of working as hard as what I was doing when I was younger. And I feel like that's going to fuck them twice as much when the cost of living goes up.
I couldn't agree more.
And then you're going to have this whole generation of people that can't afford to live on their own. They're all renting. And then, listen, you're not so invested anymore because you sold off a lot of your shit, but you understand basic investing principles. Like, you make money. You invest it, it compounds over time. Time is always to your benefit. So if you waste time, then you're going to have a very hard life.
Warren Buffett says the secret to his success is time.
That's it.
You know, he says, I've been around a gazillion years. And so, you know, it's given even bad investments time to get good.
Well, that's it. You only lose if you sell.
Correct. And he's not a big seller of anything.
He doesn't sell anything. No, no. What else do you see with the people that go through your program? We spoke about accountability. We spoke about determination. We focus about like how to be good at making money. What about the idea of balance?
If there is a balance, I quoted Jack Welch earlier. I've never found it. But I never look for it either.
Explain that.
Okay. I mean that when I got married, I said, metaphorically speaking, I'm going to make you a queen and put you in a castle. I didn't realize that I was really going to do that. And I said,
It's a beautiful castle, too.
I want a few kids. I don't know how many. I don't know how many we'll be able to conceive because I'm not going to be around. Okay? We're going to raise them strictly. The kids will be good at whatever they do. Now, I overdid it. I had professional tennis players come and given tennis lessons in the snow. I had professional, before MMA, you know, karate and taekwondo, et cetera. We used to dress for dinner every night. Tuxedo. Look, my kids hate to dress up to this day. They hate it. At my 80th birthday I had a few months ago, I was surprised they showed up in tuxedos. I mean, I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, yeah. But I'm sure somebody said, well, you won't be let in the door if you're not wearing a black tie. So there's some things you can overdo. And if you should do, back when I was a big weightlifter, I weighed 60 pounds more than I do today. I weighed 287. I'm now 237, 227. And I was on anabolic steroids and I went that whole route. If two shots are good, five are better. You know, if 5,000 milligrams is good, 25,000 is better. A regular guy couldn't afford my my drug bill for keeping me big. It took me 7 months to gain 80 pounds, about probably 65 or 70 pounds of muscle. It took me 5 years to lose it.
It's a lot of muscle.
Yeah. And the, but I always do, I overdo everything in life. I ran 40 marathons in 1 month in October 1976.
You know what, though? I think that I've said this a lot. I think that anybody who's good at being an entrepreneur, the same traits that make you good at being an entrepreneur can lead you to just being obsessed about everything in your life. Because you got to be obsessed.
I am obsessed. I still am. And it kills me why I should have. On my last trip to America, I decided, I wonder if I can keep the schedule I used to. So on one day I had 8 meetings. The next day I had 9 meetings. The next day I had 11 meetings. And the last day before we went home, I had 12 meetings. And I come back to the hotel at 1 o'clock in the morning. The last night we're there. And I sit down in the living room of our suite. My wife comes out. Are you okay? No, I can't do this anymore. I just wanted to see if I could.
That's funny.
And she says, do we have to go to the hospital? How? I said, no, I'm just beat. I haven't been beat like this. I mean, to the bone marrow, I'm beat.
Yeah, but it's a good feeling.
Yeah, it is a great feeling. But you don't need to do that. I was 79. You don't need to do that at 79, you know?
No.
Yeah.
No, but so I asked you about balance. And you know, it's so funny.
The high performance people I have the privilege of being around had none.
But why? Okay, so I have a question. Why do you say that when you have a wife that you're still in love with and married to for I don't even know how many years?
30
years. You have kids, you have family, you still work.
Estranged, but yes.
You say you don't have balance, but I know guys that have sold companies for well over 9 figures and some billionaires, and they have so many ex-wives and their kids all hate them.
I'm a good picker of talent. I thought I was, this is my second wife. I thought I was a good picker. I was obsessed with marrying a kindergarten teacher virgin.
That was what you wanted?
My first wife, exactly. That's what I wanted. A kindergarten, meaning didn't know anything, you know, a virgin, didn't know anything, and I was going to show her the ropes. That I was obsessed about that. I married one in Atlanta about 20-some years, but I mean, she got tired of being rich. You know, I can make my own coffee. I don't need the butler to. You know, I can make my own bed. I don't need the maids. And there's a point. I didn't think, I haven't, like, my first butler, I get out of the bath and he's standing there with a towel. I don't need a guy to wrap a towel around me when I step out of the bath.
That's fair.
Okay. Now, women, that's okay. Not with a butler, a maid.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. And I like when I want a martini, a robot next year, Gordon 3. A Vesper, please. And that I can do, okay? That I can do. And the challenge we're going to have is because we have a lot of steps in the castle, okay? And so some of the basic robots can't handle the steps. But the sophisticated robots can.
Of course they can. The new ones definitely can.
Getting back to balance.
Yeah.
And when I was around with the Onassis people, Konstantin Gratzos, the CEO, who was my mentor for a long time, and when I've been around the Hunts, and when I went around Ross Perot, and I've been around T. Boone Pickens and these guys, they work like dogs, you know, and to the extent, like Ross Perot had a deal for the Naval Academy, he went there. Okay. T. Boone Pickens had a thing for University of Oklahoma because he went there. Okay. So the time that he would maybe should have spent or could have spent time with his family, he was at some Oklahoma game or something. And so I went to a school you got to explain about. I have no athletic ability other than I can run a long distance because I found out that 80% of my muscles are slow twitch muscles. Slow twitch. Which means...
you're a good sprinter.
No. Slow twitch means you have no fast twitch muscles, no sprinting, but it's good for long distance running.
I'm 24. Okay, I get them mixed up.
Okay,
like
okay. And the fact that I was able to, I didn't figure this out until I was in my early 30s. If I had known, you know, that I had slow twitch muscles, I'm uncoordinated. They used to tease me, the football coach used to say, Pina, you're so slow, you should wear the other team's jersey, you know? And when I went to Ranger School, I was slow. I was in the last 10%. They used to let me run out ahead of the when we were on maneuvers.
Give you a head start?
A head start. And they said, run towards the gunfire, Pina. And they all thought, well, I didn't go to Vietnam, but they all thought Pina's going to get a Medal of Honor because he's running towards the gunfire. And well, I'm slow and I'm clumsy. I'm clumsy. I don't have the same nerve endings in my hands and feet. But I didn't know that until I was an adult and I paid a bunch of doctors, you know. Yeah. When I volunteered for the draft, in 1966, at more or less one of the heights of the Vietnam War. But once I got, the first high-performance thing I ever did was graduate from OCS, when OCS was tough. Now, Ranger School, SEAL School, et cetera, that you're off for the weekends. Now, when I went to the training, no weekends were off. But I went, I volunteered a private. I was an officer in less than a year, which is unheard of, okay? And I started competing against other people. And I realized whether they went to West Point or... And I befriended generals because they saw them in me, okay? And that's history.
When you look at men in society today, you said many times you think men have become weak. Why do you think men have become weak?
I'm going to give you an example. We have a success test, three actually. One of the first questions is, you're walking down the street and somebody spits in your wife's or your girlfriend's face. What do you do? There's four options. The first option is, A, I try to ascertain what kind of day he's having. That's option one.
Like ask him how his day is going.
Yeah. Option two, and fourth option, I might seriously consider an altercation. When we came up with a test 20-some years ago, we had a 91.6% failure rate of the test in general. Now, 20 years later, we have a 98.6% failure rate. So we become more of a cunt in 20 years. Where I come from, if I can't physically, with my own hands, beat him to death, I find something to beat him to death. And there's no other answer. When I at my high school reunion, and the guys all laugh, and they says, who are these must be white cunts. And they're not all white, but I mean... In the hood, I mean, even making a joke. My favorite cousin, his girlfriend, when we were juniors in high school. He went to Lincoln High School in the hood, East L.A. Somebody said that his girlfriend's ass looked like two pigs in a gunny sack. Okay, now it's prominent to have a big ass. Now they want you to have a big ass, you know. And,
not then.
Okay, not then. And so he stabbed the guy 17 times. By the grace of God, he didn't kill him. He went off to the junior San Quentin of the time. San Quentin's a big prison in California. For just saying, not to his face, but to somebody else, and it got around to my cousin Ronnie, and stabbed him 17 times to save, you know. It was a different world. I mean, those were more than fighting words. I mean, Jesus Christ.
If you were going to be the perfect dad to a young boy, what do you have to do so that they grow up?
Show by example. It's hard to even say. What are manly endeavors? Baseball games, stuff like that. I attended, and my youngest son was a super athlete. I attended one football game and one baseball game. He batted 640 baseball. I went to one game. And then the coach comes to me, says, can you tune down Derek down a little? What the fuck does that mean? Well, he's batting more than twice the average of anybody in the league. He batted 215 the next year and quit baseball.
Why would he? Why?
Because he wanted to be liked by the other players.
So what you see...
He went from 640...
I know.
...to quit baseball.
So everybody is dumbing themselves down.
Correct. Oh, I gave a big speech. I was a keynote speaker at a big deal in Scotland a few months ago. And I made a special effort to go to the awards dinner. Yeah. I was a keynote speaker. Normally, I'm the last speaker. I'm the anchor to make sure people stay for the whole event. And there was 80 or 90 people. And they were there to meet me at dinner. Now, one person came up to my table because the 2 hours prior to that, I beat them. I skinned them like a fucking banana about their, you know. And these are supposed to be high performance, wealthy people. And I said, my wife said, nobody's coming up to talk to you. And so the founder of the deal, who I trained, he said, you scared them. They're afraid to come up and talk to you, Mr. Pena. Costa Galazzo says, Zonas's group said, if you're not afraid of Pena, you're stupid. When I get things done that nobody can get done. For example, and I'm not trying to intimidate anybody, but when I say I'm going to fuck you up, that's exactly what I mean, and that's exactly what's going to happen. Whether it's your business, you personally, your family, I erase the DNA of your family. And that's how the big boys play. Guys, you're here, so I'm going to use you as an example. That's not what you want in your life.
No, of course not.
Oh, but I mean, I can show you how to get $4 or $5 billion. You want to play with the big boys? You get off the porch and stop licking your balls? You want to hunt with the big dogs? That's what happens. And that's what still happens today. And everybody knows it. Just because you don't know it, just because Klaus won't admit it.
Not everybody wants to deal with that shit in their life.
No, nobody. And that's why it's open market for people like me.
But there's a sliding scale.
Yes, there is.
Between
absolutely.
Where people who can't even deal with confrontation and talking to you at a dinner, and then whatever the fuck that is on the other end of the scale, and you have people that are all the way over here, and you have you all the way over here, and people can...
No, there's people wide of me.
Fine. You have here and you have... but how do you get somebody who's too scared to even take action in their life to get to not everybody needs to be this aggressive, not everybody, but a little bit aggressive so that you can grab life by the balls.
Stand up for yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
Have some self-confidence, have some self-awareness.
Go shake your hand at a dinner. What the fuck's going to happen at a dinner?
85% of the people that shake my hand, their hand's wet. Not because they pissed themselves. And part of the classes we teach them, before you dry your hands.
How do you?
And I haven't done anything real ugly in a long time. But I will, you know, they didn't want me to go to the Bank of England when we were discussing taking an option public because they, you know, I might do something that I'd be sorry for. But in the old days when they, investment banking, you said something on a handshake for real.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. By the way, people still do deals like that outside of the U.S. Now everybody's.
No, but I'm in the U.S. I mean, I want a contract that thick. I'm not interested in this little mealy mouth handshake.
I know.
And there's certain businesses, the oil and gas business is still handshake deals are still pretty good. When the former chairman of ExxonMobil became the chief of staff for Trump first time around, I knew him when he was a middle manager. Hey, John, give me some fucking coffee, you lard ass. And then he's chief of staff for the president. But people have their limits. Mad Dog Mattis, who was chief of staff for a while, and the other general, I forget his name now, they have limits, okay? But I was privileged to sit on a board not too long ago with a former commandant of the Marine Corps, General Neller. And he said that your kind of military, Mr. Pena, doesn't exist anymore. it doesn't exist anymore. Because let's say I were in a firefight, and I say, okay, we're just sweep, blah, 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 and then all you guys get killed. Okay? And then they come back for the court-martial. They're going to court-martial you because you wasted all these lives. And you say that General Pena, I don't know this kid. Who is this kid? I didn't tell him to do fuck all. He did it in his own volition. He's an idiot. That's what we have now. So consequently, you're not going to run around over there because you know that the chances are 50-50. I'm not going to back you up when the shit hits the fan. And now in business, people don't back people up. I tape all my phone calls and have taped all my phone calls for 25 years. I've only had to use it a couple times, but people know I tape it. So if they don't want me to tape, I said, we don't have anything to talk about then. See, that's a red flag to me that you don't want me to tape the phone call. I'm not worried about anything I say. So that means by definition, you're worried about something you're going to say.
So the rules of life are different.
Correct.
The game's changing.
And the rules of engagement in some cases don't exist anymore. And that's why I have young kids, 23 to 35, that are able to build 500, 600, 800 billion dollar companies, and not overnight, because it always takes longer than you plan, but almost overnight, when it used to be a 25, 30 year program, how I was able to assist Klaus become CEO of Siemens against all the competitors. Klaus used to say, I'm not Bavarian, and they never had a CEO that wasn't Bavarian. I speak German with an accent, which you and I couldn't tell, but I mean, anyway, but when the day he became CEO, I mean, all that is history. Rick Scott building the largest healthcare company in the history of the world, who put his way through college and law school by owning two Dunkin' Donuts shops or stores, whatever you call them. But that's still possible.
What do you want to tell people who are just starting out on their journey right now? Young kids.
It's easier to stay focused, laser beam focused. Not easy, but it's easier if you're passionate about it. I'm a transaction junkie. I mean, deals, I get off on deals. I happen to have a lot of expertise in healthcare. When I told Rick Scott before he founded Columbia Healthcare, healthcare was going to 3% a year back in the late 80s. It's now going at about 30% a year. Okay. If you're not in it's a tech related business, AI, cybersecurity, and that kind of thing, if you're passionate about that, if you're not passionate about it, then you're pissing in the wind. And you can roll up anything. I mean, back in the 90s, we used to take the yellow pages, which they don't have anymore, a yellow page, and you throw it on the ground. Whichever page you'd open it up to, that's what we're buying. Then make a difference during the classes I'd give. And, of course, they were skeptical, to say the least. And then I'd help them, and I'd get through the first gatekeeper, the second gatekeeper, okay, to the principal. Best time to call people that you want to buy their business is Friday afternoon, Saturday, Sunday, early Monday morning, because nobody's working except the owner, okay? I guess you must own the place, otherwise you wouldn't be there on Sunday morning. Yeah, it's a real bitch. I can't get anybody to work. When was the last time you thought about selling your business, mister? Today. I'll be right over. Now, I used to use a line, which was slightly not true. I'm in your neighborhood. I'm in Cleveland. He's in Chicago. But I used to travel around the country in Greyhound buses.
Used to do what it has to do to
get done. No matter what. And I was never late for an appointment. Okay. But I was hungry. Fuck, I was hungry.
You don't see the hunger anymore.
No. Mm-mm. Oh, there's two books out in the last few years, both called Enough. One is A Woke Guy, How Much Do You Have to Earn Enough? I mean, you know, are you feeding in the kids in Biafra, et cetera, et cetera. The other, Enough, is written by a Navy SEAL, ex-SEAL. Never enough. You can never do enough for freedom, et cetera. Freedom is not free, et cetera, et cetera. And the... But now, I mean, they get lazy. I gave a speech in New Zealand several years ago, and success to a guy just getting out of university said 100 grand a year, two Beamers, meaning BMWs for him and his wife, and a ski chalet or someplace. And that was success to them. Today, you know, I don't know what it would be, but it's certainly not what's available. We have 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds that are making $2 million a year.
Yeah.
They have to have their mom sign the shit because they're not.
They're all. By the way, they're all social media too.
Yeah.
They're all social media, and they're making tons of money.
Yeah, and the one of my superstar families, the Carlings, I trained their son who just turned 18. He's on his third acquisition. He's rolling up sports bars. Now I think it's because of titty bars. Myself, this is my own opinion. He never told me that, and I did his first podcast. He's a podster.
He's on a top of
yeah.
Too? What's his name? I'll watch his stuff.
Michael Carling.
I'll watch his stuff.
Okay. And he says, he just turned, he had his 18th birthday. So now he doesn't have to have his mom sign. He can sign now. He's 18. He dropped out of school at 16, which you can do in Europe, in most countries. Mandatory school till 16. I'm fortunate enough to be able to be training second generation. Now, like I say, because I'm going to be alive when I'm 100 and something, I may live long enough to do third generation of these kids, but it's the same message. The only new thing, financial tools we have in the world today are crowdfunding and the blockchain shit. I don't mean shit, but I mean blockchain. Those are the only new things. Everything else is the same 25 or 30 instruments that we've had for a century. And what I did is I took the Andrew Carnegie model from the mid to late 1800s. I put some bells and whistles on it to bring it up to the last century, more currently to this century. And he refrained from commercial debt. He liked because, and he never took equity in because he didn't want to reduce his ownership. And if his default was commercial debt. And now our default, our regular methodology is seller's finance. Commercial debt is our default. And there's tons of money right now. There's 75% of all transactions in the world are done the last 60 days of the year. 75% of all financial transactions are Christmas. Done the last 60 days of the year.
And by the way, biggest wealth transfer ever with all the boomers retiring and no kids are taking over their business too.
Yep. And, that's going to be trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
And that generation is not ready. You know, they've
got to level up.
The retiring senior wealth manager of J.P. Morgan came to the seminar about a year ago. She retired, and she's got a Rolodex like nobody has in the world. And I mean, the first day in business, she probably did $100 million in revenue. But you don't have to have that. You don't have to have that kind of entree. It doesn't hurt, obviously, but the and a lot of guys, I believe Patrick was a stockbroker or financial advisor, he calls him.
Financial advisor.
Yeah, okay. Well,
yeah.
I mean, stockbroker back in the day. But you don't have to have that kind of knowledge. You just have to have the will and determination and don't give up. And then if push comes to worst, I'm saying this tongue in cheek, you can always be a podster.
Indeed is a success story partner. Now, if you're hiring, Indeed is all you need. Let me give you an example. If I needed to hire a new editor for this show, I'd go to Indeed and be super specific. Not just, can you edit audio? I'd say I need someone who's edited a conversational podcast for at least 3 years, gets our style, and knows our software. Someone who's done this before. And here's the thing with Indeed sponsored jobs. I'd get people who fit that description. I'm not digging through resumes from people who've edited one YouTube video. I'm getting actual podcast editors who know what they're doing, people who've worked on shows like ours and can prove it. That's what makes a difference. You get people who actually are what you're looking for. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed are 90% more likely to report a hire than non-sponsored jobs. And people are finding quality hires right now. In the minute that I've been speaking to you, companies like yours have made 27 hires on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all the boxes, less stress, less time, and more results now with Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help you get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/Clary. Just go to Indeed.com/Clary right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Clary. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, do it the right way with Indeed.
HubSpot is a success story partner. Now, if you're looking for a new podcast, one of my favorite shows right now is Demand Decoded. If you're in the B2B marketing space, you need to be listening to this. It's hosted by the team at Blend. They are are a demand gen agency. They know what they're doing. They're also part of the HubSpot podcast network. What I love about it is they skip all the theory and they just tell you what's actually working today. So demand gen, marketing, content, LinkedIn ads, attribution. They talk about real strategies that they are using that you can use today that are working. So if you're an entrepreneur, if you're building a business, if you're really selling anything to anyone, go search Demand Decoded wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody ask you this, but I'm more curious now because everybody who I speak to is an entrepreneur. And you are an entrepreneur, and the people that go through QLA are entrepreneurs, but you don't tell them to build a company from scratch. You tell them to buy a company.
It's easier to, organic growth is painful. It's easier to buy revenue than create it. Because when you come in with a company that's got $10 million in revenue, the bank, to the extent they use commercial banking, the bank already knows, they don't care if it took 50 years to create that $10 million or 5 days. It's already de-risked, de-levered, because you've already got it and you can show them. You know, and you've got 3 or 4 or 5 years of tax returns, and they plus or minus the same as your net books or whatever the thing you use internally. Occasionally, 1 in 10 has some audited numbers, which is rare. But it's easier to buy revenue than it is. And you can discount the revenue. When they tell you it took me 25 years to build this, I said, well, that's not my problem, sir. With the greatest respect, you know, we're buying companies at 2 to 3.5, 4 times EBITDA. We have them 10 miles deep and 1,000 across. I mean, and that's just it. And the AI is an exception to that rule because they're selling for times revenue.
Which is wild.
Yeah, and that's why my hand rarely shakes when I'm signing documents. But on Monday, when I signed that document, I said, let's quit talking about it. Let's just sign the papers.
So you closed on this.
Yeah.
When you look at the roll-ups, you don't care. Because like strategically, if somebody's listening to this and is like, oh, this is an interesting strategy, because a lot of stuff we talk about is build a business. Slow, painful, for sure. You buy revenue instead.
You discussed how it was painful starting this podcast.
Oh, it's painful as hell.
I know.
It was painful as hell. Yeah, it's the most work I've ever done for something for the least amount of return. But it compounds over time.
I understand that.
Now, if I wanted to buy revenue immediately. But the thing is, a podcast, you build media to use it to launch other businesses. So now what I can do, because I have eyeballs, I can buy businesses, and then I can take a business that's underperforming but has a good product, and then I can drive I can drive eyeballs to it, and then I can take that revenue and almost turn it into a predictable cash machine. That's why you build the media. That's the real reason. I mean, you can go become the next Fox or MSNBC or whatever podcast network you want to become, but I don't think that's really why most people start to become, you know, like influencers or podsters or whatever. The smartest ones, the Jake Paul, the Logan Paul, the Mr. Beast, yeah, they make money on their content, but then they make money on their product too. You got to have the product. But you think about if you have the podcast, you already have a good YouTube channel and a good following, you don't even use it.
No.
For your portfolio companies. But you could.
I could.
You could.
And then this is some of the things we're looking at changing next year. I was on Paul's...
Impulsive. Yeah. I saw it. Yeah.
And before his brother's first fight. And he was training in the back. They had a ring in their house. This is when they lived in Los Angeles area. I looked at the kid, and you know, his father was there. His father is a driving force. I mean, tough as fucking nails. And I said, well, I don't know anything about that. But at that time, he was skinny. He's put on 20, 30 pounds of muscle now. I said, he looks a little skinny to me now. He says, well, that's not our plan. The first couple of fights, he may be skinny, but by the time he gets to where he wants to go, you know, he's going to be the light heavyweight or a heavyweight. And now I hear he's going to fight the guy, the former champion from England.
Oh, fuck. I know who you're talking
about.
Yeah. I can't remember his name.
Now, I don't know about his first test, but I mean, that guy's not some wimp.
Retired boxer.
Yeah, well, no, but and he's still young.
Yeah.
I mean, and so.
But that's a good point. You know, you mentioned that the father is a driving force in like a young man's life. And 100%. That is, like, I think that dads have to pay more attention to the life they live and the influence they have on their kids, especially their boys.
And that's why single mothers do have a harder time, okay, when there's not a man in their life, etc.
And you know why success is not an accident. One of my favorite examples, I'm Canadian, so I played a lot of hockey, so I know a lot of hockey players. And there's three brothers, the Stahl brothers, and they all played professional hockey, and they all made it to the NHL.
You can't tell. And the chance for a random kid playing hockey to go pro is very rare, right? I mean, how many hockey players, how like basketball, football, what's the percentage of the people that go pro get big contracts? Small, right? So how do three brothers all make it?
Almost impossible.
Well, it's because it's like that's the environment. That's the family they grew up in. That's the dad. That's them pushing themselves. It's not chance that three brothers make it. It's that the environment they grew up in made it impossible not to succeed. And I think that's so, that's such a, in my opinion, that's a powerful lesson because it just shows how important proximity to greatness really is. If you have one brother that makes it, the next brother wants to make it, the third brother wants to make it. It means that if you want to be successful at something that you mentioned before, like the people who you surround yourself with are so important. You spend your you spend your life with, you know, five people that make no money, you're going to be the sixth. You spend your life with five millionaires, you're going to be the sixth. Spend your life with five entrepreneurs, you'll be like, this is so.
That's exactly what Denzel Washington said in his recent, I don't know if it's a podcast, but Denzel Washington said, Okay, you're the sixth, you'll be the sixth, et cetera. If you hang around with five idiots, you'll be the sixth.
But it's so true.
Yeah.
And if you think that, like, if you think that life is tough or you're not making enough money, you're not happy with whatever it is your life is right now, you feel like your life is shit. Like, why don't you just change who you spend the most
Absolutely.
Time with?
Correct. Correct. And when I left the United States in 81 to go to Europe, I didn't want to be part of the Hispanic familia because I saw, even though, you know, my dad was a successful cop, but I mean, nobody made any money. Success to them was becoming a principal of a high school. And that's fine. That's great. That's a great profession, honorable. But that's not what I wanted. And I always, you know, flap my lips that I wanted this. And the example I used to use at the beginning of Muhammad Ali, who used to be Cassius Clay, he was saying he was the greatest before he fought a fucking fight. Yeah. He was always flapping his mouth, okay? His alligator mouth overloading his hummingbird ass, and he performed. And so the, but it's, you don't see that. You see once in a while, you see it in boxing. Once in a while, you see it in basketball. But I mean, you normally, unless you come from those elitist sports, you don't see it at all. And in my particular case, my dad was an all-state, all-American athlete in three sports, and I couldn't catch a baseball. I mean, literally, it must have been painful for him. Well, you know, I still remember I couldn't make the varsity baseball team. I made the JV, junior varsity. And I'm sitting in center field, and we're winning 3-2. The bottom of the ninth, the bases are loaded, and some big power hitter comes up, and I said, please, God, don't let him hit it to center field. Please, God. And what would the fucker do? He hit it to center field, and I dropped it. Now, my teammates and the coach said the sun got in my... Whether the sun got in my... I dropped the fucking ball. That's all I know. And we lost. That's all I... And so, fortunately, my dad wasn't at that game. He only came to one game, and fortunately, it wasn't that game. But the athlete would have caught the ball.
Yeah.
You know? And then paraded around.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
But may I drop the fucking ball anyway. But I'm going to come back as a podster.
Like, when you look back at everything you've done in your life, what do you want to...
Saving the Catholic Church.
Saving the Catholic...
Sainthood, while I'm still alive. Canonized. And I say it seriously.
I know you say it seriously.
Yeah, I'm not fucking around.
I know you're not fucking around.
I tell Sally, if she had died 10, 20 years ago, I would have gone back to the seminary and become a priest. I'd be a fucking pope. Today. You know, and I'll show you how to clean up the goddamn church, and I, you know, and but there's never an easy time to make a hard decision. And right now, 75 or 80% of the people that are in the hierarchy of not just the Catholic Church, but for sure the Catholic Church, you know, want to be liked. They're in the business of being liked. Penance now.
That's everyone. It's not just a church.
Yeah, well, I understand it. But penance now. When I was a kid, I used to get a penance that would take 3 or 4 hours to say all the prayers so I'd get absolution for my sins. Now, they gave you 2 Hail Marys as penance. And so I asked the priest, and because I know a lot of them now, we can't give the kind of penance that you got when you were a kid. Nobody'd come to confession. So now you're reducing penance to get people to come to confession so they can go to communion. Exactly. The model's changed. Jesus. Well, you're not just in financial trouble. You're in emotional trouble, and I can fix that too. Too bad I'm not 60 instead of 80. I like the ring of, I'm going to become a prince of the church first. That's my next step. Because I've got three knighthoods and I've got this, that, that. Is it with Prince Peña and then Saint Peña.
And then you're good.
And then I'm good. I'm cool, yeah.
Would you say that if somebody else could live a different life than you, they should? Like, was your life the best life to live? Was your life, I mean, because you
were. What I wanted, it was the only life to live. I couldn't have done the stuff that I've done without. I couldn't have been, met and interfaced with the people that I have. Five presidents, the king, the queen, the pope. I mean, kids from the hood where I came from. That's not the life. When I tried to kill my teacher in the fifth grade, and when my cousin at dinner told my wife, yeah, we were afraid we were going to lose him then, meaning going to prison. But they don't send 10-year-olds to prison. If they had sent it to, and if the teacher hadn't moved, I dropped it from the second floor, an aquarium about this big, weighed about 40 pounds. He moved and it hit him in the shoulder and it drove his shoulder down here. I dislocated his shoulder. And if it hit him in the head, he'd be dead on arrival. And then that teacher, because we support that school now, got the teacher of the decade. Because he was a hard ass. Every day I'd come to class, Penny, you going to be a good boy today? No. Put the dunce cap on. So I stand in the corner with dunce cap for an hour or two, and he says, have you got a change of attitude? No. Get in the closet. And then I used to shit myself in the closet. And I can still feel the shit running down the inside of my leg. And then I'd be in the headmaster's office three or four times a week before noon. And my dad was a cop, and the police car used to come and collect me from school. Always in a fight. Every single day I got in a fight. I used to protect the little weak cunts. They'd come to me, Danny, and I remember they walked me around the yard. It's a good thing, a segue to close on. With my wife, two or three years ago. Didn't you used to have a four square thing here? Yeah. Why is it gone? He says, because it caused too many fights amongst the kids. And I broke a kid's arm seven places, sitting right here, standing right here. And so the principal said, how? He called the ball in when it was out. So I knocked him down and we heard a snap. And then he's crying. I think I broke my arm. And then I jumped on his arm and broke it in six more places. The teacher's crying. My wife's crying. So we go over to the tetherball, a thing that you hit around here. Yeah. Didn't there used to be a tetherball here? Yeah. Why is it gone? It caused too many fights. What'd you do here? I put a guy's eyes out. I thought. Fortunately, it didn't put his eyes out because I hit him in the glasses. And those glasses were real glass. Yeah. And what about over here? I used to go around, and girls in grammar school used to wear trainer bras. You know, little brassieres where their tits are going to grow into. And I played doctor. I was a monster. They used to call me a hellion. Hellion, I don't know what that means.
It's not a good thing.
No, but I was a fucking monster. And then my mother used to have to buy 2- and 3-day-old bread. And so she would cut the crusts off the bread. So when I go to school with my sandwich, you know. And so the teacher, the schoolyard monitor, would come and say, there's people starving in China. What did you do with that crust? Now, I was embarrassed. I didn't want to say we're buying 2- and 3-day-old bread. And it's green. You know, the bread's green. And so I hit a teacher. My daughter, when she was in the same grade, a different school, very posh school, broke the thigh of the headmaster by giving her a spin karate thing. And you wonder why the kids. The worst day of my life was the day that my two sons went into the same jail cell I did 40 years before, county jail, Los Angeles. I got arrested, and they both went into the same jail for different actions. It broke my heart. But they saw that I was a monster, and I got successful.
So they tried to copy that.
And they, in a couple of cases, they did.
You know what? Listen, not everybody's going to be you.
No, I don't want them to, God help us.
But, like I said, they can do a couple more hard things in their life.
Correct. If you come 1% closer to my end of the continuum, you're rich. If you come 5% closer to my end of the continuum, you're a billionaire.
Can you tell when someone's going to be successful?
not in the billion, no, but I can tell because we have homework during the seminar, et cetera, et cetera. And we have, I have 2,800 slides. I use between 60 and 100 slides, depending, and every night I change the slides, depending on the input from the group. Some people, mostly because of communication skills, take longer. The program is built to get rich in one deal a month. So at the end of 30 months, you've done 30 deals, and you're worth $400 or $500 million. We've only had maybe 50 or 100 people in 30 years do that. But we have, it's possible. You can do it.
You got to work.
But you got to work your balls off. You got to work your balls off. But I'm going to turn them all to podsters now. I could give a podster school, I guess.
Last thing, you know, you mentioned you would not want somebody to live the life that you lived, and that no one really could or will.
Just let me stop you.
Yeah.
On my side, you'll see a thing, the bionic man, yeah. All the artificial parts I have, okay? Knees, hip, shoulders. I've had 51 operations. I'm doing crazy shit. Run over by a 2,500-pound bull, killed a bear with a knife. I've done some crazy, crazy shit. Okay, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Okay? Again, trying to be the athlete my dad was and I wasn't. So you could grind it, pin it down to daddy issues. I still remember the only one time my dad came to my house, he didn't feel comfortable. He stood in our living room, under the Napoleonic chandelier, it cost, I don't know, $100,000, $150,000. And I had my arm around him. He said, Dan, just tell me it's not drugs. And I said, Dad, it's kind of like drugs. It's oil and gas, but it's addictive. But my dad made friends with my head of security and my head gardener while he was there. Sat in the front of the limo, not the back of the limo. My mother died there. She never came in the castle. Never. No, she'd look in the window and see me at my office. Because the big window behind me, and she'd ask the cook or whoever was coming and going from work, is he doing well? But she didn't feel comfortable being in the house.
Why not?
Because she was a servant, scrubbed toilets.
And you making money was just...
No, having that house. And even though I brought her there, she died there. You know, my wife thinks that she died there on purpose. You know,
to haunt you?
Yeah, maybe to haunt me. My cousins, nobody is. I asked my cousin the other day at dinner. We all know where you live. We had some of the cousins have showed up at the gates, security. How's he doing? I make people, if I make meatheads that are listening to this uncomfortable, I make my relatives 10 times more uncomfortable.
Did they ask you for money?
Huh? No, nobody's ever asked me because they know what the answer is. No.
Yeah, I was just listening to, you know Kevin O'Leary, obviously, and I was listening to a podcast with him, and he said the worst thing about being rich is people asking, family asking you for money.
No, they don't. But my family's too afraid to ask me for money. Now, Kevin O'Leary's supposed to be tough. You know, he talks about me. Trust me. In my world, he'd be shining somebody's shoes. Plus, he's got no real money. On top of it all.
I feel like the people that are in your world, the oligarchs, the people don't know their names.
No. I would never tell you. Yeah. But they play hard ball.
No, the last thing I was gonna ask you to tell people if they wanna connect with you or go
danpena.co.uk. Anyway, website.
It doesn't matter because I'll figure it out and I'll put it in.
I don't know what it is. I do 3 or 4 seminars a year. All my products free. The thing they should start with, there's a thing called QLA for Dummies. We wrote it for kids 20 years ago. It's the most popular thing that adults read. QLA for Dummies. It's written like for a 10, 12-year-old. You start there. My book, best-selling book, Your First 100 Million, is free. You can download it free. It's been updated a couple years ago. You follow the steps, and you, and, and, and you stay focused, and you can get rich. But it's not just a business building thing. It's a way of life. When I get up in the morning, people ask my kids at my 80th birthday, at my 70th birthday, at my 60th birthday, at my 50th and 40th birthday, is your father really like this in person? So at my 70th birthday, my daughter got up and I want to make an announcement. Please quit asking me if my dad's like this. He's like this every minute of his day. When he gets up till he goes to sleep, he's just hard. And he doesn't, they used to call me Danbo. There's a video online called Danbo. When I went to Africa and I went with film crew, BBC film crew, and I was like Tarzan, an animal, eating the hearts of animals, still pumping.
You're a different level, man. You're a different level.